okay? Because we're free thinking over here. We're free thinking. We have no time for managerial drones and worker bees and people like that. We want only people that are prepared for the new society of based groypers, pepes, incels, gamers, racists, hardcore anti... No, not...
And you know, to your point, Nick, I mean, that's what ultimately attracted, you know, when I first saw some of your clips, that's what ultimately attracted me to you, is that it wasn't this cookie cutter. It wasn't this AI, you know, kind of groomed look. It was just raw and real and, you know, occasionally offensive, occasionally off color. And that's when I said, this guy is awesome. And I talked about that in my speech, but I, you know, what is AEI? What is Cato? What are all of these establishment, quote unquote, conservative or libertarian establishments accomplishing? They have all this money. They get all of this support. And at the end of the day, what are they actually pushing?
Yeah, no, they're pushing just like gay, corporate, neoliberal. Like I was saying on my show the other day, think about how perverse it is that billboards exist. You know, like I drove back to Chicago from Orlando from AFPAC. It's 17 hours in the car and I'm driving on the highway the entire time. And it's miserable driving on the highway, especially like a two-lane highway, because you know, you get
because
behind,
you're up against like, the divider.
Well, yeah. And you like two trucks will be right next to each other going like 60 miles an hour and you get stuck behind them. I'm going like 100 miles per hour, you know, and then you come up on two trucks and they're occupying both lanes anyway. So, you know, it's miserable enough. And then you get billboard after billboard after billboard. And, you know, I'm driving and I'm passing the billboards. And as I'm seeing them, I'm thinking to myself, you know,
he is Trump's gay conservative. That's literally all he brings to the table. I mean, what did he do in Germany? What did he do in his position? And when I was at Fox, it was like,
hello? We can't hear you.
I think his mic's a little...
Oh, is my mic? Hold on one
yeah,
second.
Yeah, you're back. Oh, you're better. Yeah.
Yeah. When I was at Fox, it was like, okay, this guy's obviously clearly a homosexual. He's not admitting it. And then he made that into his entire personality. But what did he do as an ambassador to Germany? What did he do in his role in the cabinet other than allow the CPAC conservative types to say, oh, he's our first gay cabinet member?
True. Nothing to speak of on the America First front. Bad guy, bad news. I'll take Lauren Witzke and Bryson Gray any day of the week over Rick Grenell and Brandon Straka and Scott Presler and all of them. You know, Scott Presler, I will say about Scott, you know, here's a guy who... he's doing a lot of good stuff in the sense that he's like getting voters registered and like, you know, he's a very solid guy as far as ground game goes. You know, I mean, he's very helpful in that regard. But where he's problematic is his like, I remember on his Twitter banner, I think it might still be there. It says like Democrats care more about illegals than inner city black kids. And, you know, you might think that's really clever or something, but then you realize, wait a second. Is the problem with the Democrats that they don't care enough about black people? Is that the problem with anything in the society right now? That's the complaint. These Democrats don't care enough about black people. I think there's definitely an excess of caring about black people in America, up and down and across the board, like definitely a surplus of that. And like that, like cleverness, that kind of like Dinesh D'Souza, just like use the left's values. It has a certain strategic utility, but you have to recognize the limits of it. That's all it is. It's like a cheap rhetorical ploy. That's not a replacement for a solid conservative worldview. What's more, is, you know, the garbage thing. I mean, like, to me, this is the most cucked thing in the world. Scott Pressler goes around from city to city cleaning up fucking garbage for people that then don't vote for us. I mean, we have like Democrats shit up a city. They litter, you know, there's homeless people everywhere. Homeless people are like a pestilence in LA and San Francisco. Scott Pressler comes in with the garbage trucks and the teams and picks it all up and cleans it up real nice. And then they vote for Democrats anyway. And then they dirty it up again. So, you know, I've been getting into the habit of, you know, we just have to start leaving garbage around. I go to like CPAC, I eat a bag of chips and I throw the bag on the ground. I say, call up Scott Pressler. Hey, Scott, could you come pick this up? I mean, this guy should just start like a garbage company or something. He should buy a garbage truck, get out of politics, and, you know, just go around picking up after Democrats, picking up after blacks and homeless and, you know, and all of that. I mean, I am like so against that. To me, it's sort of like a balance. On the one hand, we want to make America better, but at the same time, I'm not necessarily opposed to like allowing things to get a little bit bad, because in a sense, it's like, let's take, because it's not like Scott Pressler picking up garbage is moving the country. That's not like having this profound civilizational effect. But if we take that concept and expand it, like the premise of Democrats dirty up a city and conservative activists come in and slavishly pick it up. I mean, what really are we doing in principle is we're allowing them to do terrible things without facing the consequences. I mean, I almost feel like if they're going to dirty up the city, let the city be dirty. Let it be dirty and rotten and gross and disgusting, and let these people live in it. Let them sit there and live in it and deal with it. And this is the society that you've created. And, you know, and this is just a feeling that I have. It's not a policy, because, of course, then these people pick up and they move somewhere else and they, you know, shit up some other place. But it is about recognizing that there is some advantage in, you know, wallowing in the decline a little bit, allowing people to really appreciate it and experience that and let it get to them a little bit. Even like with the masks, before the election, I was telling people, you need to go into a store without a mask on, and they're going to yell at you and they're going to kick you out and they're going to tell you to put it on. And you just got to say no and be difficult. And they're going to get mad and you're going to ruin their day. And they didn't make the mask mandate. You know, they're not responsible for it, but you got to ruin their day. Because if enough people have their days ruined every single day, you're increasing the tension in the society. Mm-hmm. You know, you're increasing the likelihood that something's going to break or something's going to snap. You know, it's like, look, you want to play this game? We want to live in this totalitarian hell. Well, you know, we're going to resist it and turn up the pressure. And if enough people do stuff like that, if enough people are wandering around maskless and employees got to yell at them and then they go home and cry and they say, oh, this guy wouldn't wear his mask. I don't know why people can't just do it. Everything is so hard. I don't see my friends anymore. You know, if enough people are breaking down like that, if like enough people break down in that way and are frustrated and stressed out, then the society will begin to break down. Then will begin.
That's what we did with the GOP. You know, everyone was saying, well, you can't let Georgia lose the election. This is terrible. And we're saying, let's let you hurt a little bit, because at the end of the day, you have to understand what this actually means.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And especially with Georgia, because I mean, that was just directed at the Republicans. That was just directed at like Mitch McConnell. Right. But I mean, even just for like the society, I mean, in some sense, it's almost like a welcome thing that dystopia is setting in, because conservatives we've been doomsday sayers for years, saying like, you know, you can't keep getting away with this stuff. It's going to catch up to you. There's not a sustainable way to live. There's not a good way to live. And, you know, for a long time, people were able to just sort of distract themselves with, and this is not a new take or anything, but people watch TV, they go to the game, they go to a concert, they drink alcohol, they do drugs recreationally. And, you know, they're really not confronting this horrible society that we're living in. And and this guy, Michael Sisko, they invited me to go out there to give a speech. And it was a Bobby Schilling and Trump campaign event. And so I went over there to give a speech with Education for Liberals. And, you know, we're hanging out. We're having a great time. We're talking about conspiracy theories and Khazars and all this. And Scott Presler shows up. And Scott Presler's like a big guy. I mean, he's like huge. He wears these cowboy boots. I don't know what it is with like gay people and being extremely tall and then wearing stilts. You know, like Lady MAGA is like tall and then he wears high heels. And like Scott Presler's a specimen. I mean, guy's a giant. And then he wears fucking cowboy boots with, you know, with a heel. So anyway, so he comes in and he goes up to Education for Liberals and he's like, oh my gosh, hi, so nice to see you again. Real warm welcome. And then he literally turns to me and he's like, hey, nice to meet you. And then like turns to the next person. I'm like, oh, what the fuck? I don't, you know. And I go to the guy, you know, I'm like, what the fuck was that all about? Was that personal? Is he trying to like, was he throwing shade at me or whatever? And he's like, oh no, I think he was kidding. I'm like, I don't think that guy has a good sense of humor or something. That wasn't very funny. But anyway, so that was like my only run-in with him. And I'm sure he was a little standoffish or cold or whatever, because he knows what I'm about. But it's not even like a personal thing against him. I'm just memeing. I'm just bantering, whatever. But you know, the guy is like, he's a good activist and all that. And I wish like VoIPers could take a page from his playbook, register voters, understand the ground game and all of that. But the guy epitomizes what's wrong with the party, you know, big gay specimen. And he's going out there saying that the biggest problem with the Democrats is they don't care enough about black kids. They care more about illegals than black kids. I mean, this is like, this is a like dialectic that does nothing for us. I mean, that does not move the ball forward at all. It's playing into the left's values. It's playing into the left's like racial caste system of, you know, blacks at the top and Democrats are doing it wrong because don't you know that blacks rank higher than illegal Mexicans? Like, it's the messaging is so terrible. And that's what he's built his whole brand off of. There's nothing authentically conservative about this guy. He doesn't get up there and give a speech about heritage, identity, our nation, globalism. He goes up there and gives a speech about like Nancy Pelosi doesn't care about inner city black kids. Like, I mean, this is like mush. This is just like fucking baby food as far as politics goes. And I don't know, maybe you need that. Maybe you need to feed baby food to the fucking baby boomers, right? To spoon feed them. Oh, Nancy Pelosi. Like Nancy Pelosi's got fucking nothing to do with it, dummy. Like none of these politicians do.
Yeah, I mean, like they definitely, like that is a problem with a lot of the sort of more mainstream conservatives is that they just use the left's playbook to talk, like I saw Stephen Crowder, who like I still think is a relatively funny guy apart from when he takes every opportunity possible to dress up as a woman, but you know he said that, you know, like the banning of Dr. Seuss books from eBay is fascism. And I was like, you know, conservatives go 5 minutes without calling anything bad fascism challenge impossible. And it's like fascism, like I'm not a fascist, I don't like it, but it's a right-wing ideology and it's what the left use to attack us. And if we use their language, like if Stephen Crowder had called it communist, at least it would be a little boomer, but it's not playing into the left's playbook. It's not, like if we started calling things like Nazi, fascist, using all of their terms, that's not fucking helpful. That doesn't help us at all, because then we're on the back foot. Yeah, as cringe as things like calling people communist or cultural Marxist or whatever, as cringe as they are, those are still our terms, and it's the right stepping stone to, pushing back against their values.
Yeah,
no, I don't know. Fascism is pretty base.
Bruh.
Wow. Disavow. Disavow.
But it's true. I mean, and like the thing about politics is we've got to get out of the shadow of Hitler. Frankly, I mean, like, look, it happened a long time ago. It's not relevant now. And you know what I began to notice when I was younger? This is real clubhouse shit. OK, you're not going to hear this on America First. This is some real clubhouse shit. This is friends. We are in this clubhouse. We have sworn the oath. We have taken the clubhouse pledge that, you know, this is very private. We're not going to share this with the world. But, you know, what I began to notice was, you know, when I first got into streaming and I would talk about, like, look, white people are under attack, obviously. White countries are being subjected to transformative demographic change through immigration. This isn't happening to any other civilization. It's clearly racial, you know. I mean, clearly that's what's going on. And people would always respond, you're a Nazi. Oh, well, that's what Hitler said or whatever. And I found that time and again, you know, anytime that somebody would make an argument about race, anytime that somebody would mention white, anytime that somebody would talk about maybe like a more right-wing authoritarian government fusing maybe like center or left economics with right culture and right identity, people would always default back to Nazi, Hitler, you know, this kind of thing. And I began to realize that is just a way to you know, shut off thinking when it comes to those things. Oh, well, we can't talk about white because that's what Hitler did. We can't talk about, you know, everything I've just described because it falls into this, you know, this trope, it falls into this bad connotation. And it's like, then, I mean, maybe you begin to unravel some things about World War II, you know, maybe begin to unravel some things about that narrative, which may be problematic or whatever. But like, fundamentally, that's why right-wing people, it's a mistake for them to engage with that. Because when you engage with like the Dinesh D'Souza, the Nazis were like socialists. It was a battle between brothers, narcissism of small differences. The reason the Nazis and the communists hated each other is because they were so similar. And like, you know, Antifa are like Nazis. Like, this doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help anybody because fundamentally, if we are to conserve our society, we want to preserve our demographics. We want to preserve the family. We are conservative. And like you said, John, like, fascism is a right-wing ideology. So like, trying to paint our enemies as something to our right, trying to make the ultimate evil like our neighbor to the right or something further out to the right, like, it doesn't do us any favors. If we're trying to preserve our white demographic core, like I said in my speech, it does us no favors to try to portray the left as the real racists, the real Nazis, because those words and that like moral system, which puts being racist as the worst thing that you could be, that does not play well to those objectives. Like, you cannot at once say that the worst thing you could be is racially conscious or a so-called racist or a so-called Nazi, and then say that we want to preserve the demographics of the country. Like, those two things don't work together. It doesn't work like that. What we should be saying is that the left is secular, they're atheist, they're globalist, and they want to destroy America. And all of that is true. Like, let's back up for one second. These people hate America. They want to destroy it. That's what they're doing. That's what immigration is about. They're tearing down the fucking statues of the people that founded this place. So why are we trying to pander to their moral worldview? Their moral worldview has no value to me because they want to destroy me and my country. And like, that has got to be the new axis. That has to be the moral paradigm of the right, rather than just sort of lazily taking their thing and saying, oh, I know you are, but what am I? I'm a Nazi? Oh, I know you are, but what am I? Oh, well, FDR was pen pals with Mussolini. Oh, okay. That doesn't matter, actually. I mean, like, I just want my grandchildren to look like me. I want America to look like it did when my parents were growing up. I want America to be great again. And, you know, all this complicated stuff about, did you know that the KKK was Democrats? No, who fucking cares? You know? Who cares, actually? You know?
And it's so true. Like, you know, we like, if you're in the political world, you tried to care about all of this stuff, and you tried to educate yourself on, you know, on the history of the Democrat Party and how they were racist. And at a certain point, you're just like, no, it doesn't actually fucking matter. It doesn't actually fucking matter, because we're in 2021 right now, and all of this stuff about how the Democrat Party was the real party of slavery doesn't actually matter right now. And I think it's become a talking point, and people who propagate it are simply doing it because it's financially expedient for them, and because they can get they can get a hit on Fox News, they can get an appearance on who knows what news network. But it's it just rains empty for me.
Yeah. Well, and like at the end of the day, a big part of it is that a lot of like white people and conservatives, the moral conditioning has worked on them. Like a lot of white people and conservatives do feel guilty about racism, whether they want to admit it or not. You know, and many conservatives, maybe most conservatives, like a lot of boomers, when they watch Dinesh D'Souza, they're patting themselves on the back saying, see, we're not so bad after all. We're actually not racist. And, you know, when they see the gay black veteran on the stage, they're patting themselves on the back and saying, oh, isn't this so great? And that's because, like, the moral imperialism of the left has worked consciously or and subconsciously for a lot of these people. And, you know, what we're about are our sort of aggressive and muscular posture on these issues. When I say, like, white demographic core, it is challenging that moral imperialism. We're saying, look, no, I actually don't feel guilty about racism. I don't feel guilty about all of that. I don't seek the approval of blacks. I don't seek the approval of so-called anti-racists. I don't seek to be seen as not racist. I have political objectives that are independent of all of that. My political objectives are that I want to preserve America. I mean, that overrides all of those things. You know, I mean, it just so happens that I don't hate minorities, you know, I don't hate non-white people and all of that. But I mean, this is really irrelevant. My mission is to preserve America, make America great again, you know, and a lot of like conservatives, they, like I said, because of moral imperialism, it is more important to them to feel good about what they're doing based on this moral standard set by the left that they're not racist. They don't appear racist. They're the good guys of history. They're on the right side of history as the left defines it, then that they're doing something effective, then that they're doing the truly right thing, defending their country. So, and what's more, you know, you bring up how, you know, Democrats were in favor of slavery and all this. It's like, you know, has anybody ever thought of the fact that both sides on the Civil War would be against the left? Like both sides on the Civil War would be more right wing than any politician that is alive today, the Confederates and the Union, the so-called Democrats and the Republicans. They would both be further to the right on everything than every politician today. They would shake hands, Robert E. Lee and Grant, Abraham Lincoln and Jefferson Davis, and they would say, why? I mean, I can't even say what they would say about Barack Obama. You know, I can't even say what they would together say about Barack Obama and Maxine Waters and Stacey Abrams. And we all know what that is. And the same goes for both sides of World War II. If every side, Germans, Italians, French, British, and American, Russian, could see what the world has become today, they would all unite against everyone in the world today. They would form a global alliance against future generations of their own countries. And then you got Antifa that's out there saying, I saw a tweet today, they were like, we beat you in 1865, we beat you in 1945, we'll beat you again. I'm like, who are you talking about? You and me. It's like everyone that fought in 1865 and everyone that fought in the 40s would, I mean, if they saw that you were what they were fighting for ultimately in the future, they wouldn't fight. They would stay home. You know, I mean, they would tell their kids that they would be hardcore, you know, more hardcore than they were before. So, you know, these kinds of like allusions to the past, it forgets that like, back then, those ideological conflicts have no salience with the situation today because it is so radically different. It is so radically further to the left in every aspect that, like, you know, saying the Democrats were in favor of slavery. Well, the Democrats and the Republicans were far closer together in 1865 than they are to the Republicans and the Democrats today. And like nobody talks about that.
Right. Well, yeah. I think you've made this point before, Nick. And it's like when I talk about quote unquote racism from Nick, and it's like you talk to a mom, the whole it's Nick is so controversial because of his opinion on race mixing on. And I'm like, you talk to a black mom, about race mixing. All right. She's like, you brought home a white girl? I mean, that's what a black mom is like. You talk to a Jewish mom, and she's like, oh, you're gonna marry a beautiful Jewish girl. All right, you talk to an Asian mom,
and she says, "Oh well, yeah, oh yeah, oh he know Chinese." I mean, that... So, but then Nick says, "I want to marry a white woman," and all of a sudden, it's the most controversial thing in the world. And so,
I think.
Go on.
Sorry. No, I'll let you finish, and I'll jump in after.
But all I'm saying is that this notion that you want to contribute to your race, you want to defend your race, and that you want to actually contribute to your race and not let it die out is something that only white people have to deal with, because every other single minority is able to get away with it with flying colors.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think a lot of the fact that the conservatives are so eager to prove that they're not racist, I'm not racist. I know I'm not racist. I've never judged somebody based off of the color of their skin ever in my life, right? But I don't have to prove that. I don't feel a need to prove that to every single fucking journalist out there, every single MSNBC commentator. I don't feel, I don't have this desire to be appreciated by people who fucking despise me, which a lot of the people on the conservative movement do. And ironically, from the fucking, lily white, liberal DC commentators, I bet a lot of it's fucking projection, because the amount of the America First movement, the people I know, it's so it's unironically so ethnically diverse that to say that, it's a whole multicultural white supremacy shit. Like, what? That doesn't make any fucking sense at all. All of the arguments that people have, just it's completely nonsensical.
Yeah, well, and true. Like, even at AFPAC, not even just the speakers, but the attendees, it wasn't all white people. And, I almost hate saying that, because it's like you said, you're trying to appease people that hate you and everything. But for people that are interested in the truth, like, the message that we're talking about, like John said, appeals to all people. It's a traditional pro-family Christian message that all the immigrants that are coming here believe in to an extent. It's no secret that it is non-whites that are the most racist. If we're using the term with its vernacular definition, it is non-white people that are the most racist. It is blacks who are prejudiced against whites, and skeptical of whites. It is Asians that have a strong in-group reference, the same for Jews, and it's Hispanics. As far as people having a racial consciousness, exercising a sort of in-group preference, being skeptical of other groups, of course, the only groups that are able to do this are non-white groups, and they're the only ones, or rather largely the ones that do. I mean, there are some white people that feel this way subconsciously or privately, but this is how every other group operates. And when I do a show and I say, yeah, we're against race mixing, it's a lot of black people that are like, fuck yeah, we totally agree. It's a lot of all these other groups that totally agree. And, everybody can understand what I'm talking about. The show, I don't go on my show and say, hey, good evening, you're watching America First, and we want a whites-only America, and if you're not white, we hate you. That's never been the premise of the show. The show has been, these globalist people are fucking everything up, they're betraying America, they're totally corrupt, they're trying to destroy what America used to be, and we need to stop them. And everyone's on board, and part of their agenda is destroying the demographic core of the country. And people need to understand this. America comes out of the wellspring of its white demographic core. The founding stock from England, which my ancestors are not a part of, and to some extent, the founding stock of even the Northern Europeans that came in the century after the founding. The people who came from Germany, Scandinavia, it is that founding stock that was the golden goose that laid the golden egg of America. It was the white demographic core, even with the assimilated Eastern and Southern Europeans that came in at the turn of the 20th century, that are perpetuating and generating America as we know it. And I'll say, even the Italians and Irish were a problematic addition at first. If you look at crime, if you look at some of the urban problems, Italians and Irish, before they were assimilated, they were problematic in their own way, and eventually they integrated and everything. And those were my ancestors. I'm Italian, Mexican, and Irish. They all came over in the late 20th, or rather late 19th, early 20th century, and that's part of it too. And, there's this difference between wanting to protect that core so that America can be perpetuated for everybody and saying that we're only going to have white people or we're going to do this purity test. Like, you know, I think non-white conservatives recognize, or maybe they should recognize, that for America to continue to be what it is, and for non-white people to enjoy America for what it is and benefit from America as what it is, they too have a stake and an interest in protecting that white demographic core. We're not saying that if you're not white, you got to scram and get out of here and you're not part of America. We're not saying that. We're saying that America would not be America without that core. America cannot continue to exist without that core. America won't be like it was and as prosperous as it was without that core. And the prosperity and the fruits of that demographic core in the American nation are shared by everybody. And so, like, you know, journalists tell me all the time, Fuentes, that's not an English name. Fuentes, your ancestors don't descend from the founding stock. It's like, yeah, retard, I know. Yeah, you fucking idiot, yeah. I know. I am Italian, Mexican, and Irish. I'm an Amerimutt descended from American ethnics that came here in the 20th century. And I, just like my ancestors, recognize that we came here and America is great because of that founding stock of people. And I'm not narcissistic enough or an imperialist to come over here and say, nah, I make America great. You know, we come over here and it's a shining city on a hill and we're like, you know what? Nah, fuck this. Take down the statues. I make America great. You're a racist. You know, I'm cooking up spaghetti. And I'm not saying that. I'm saying even if I'm not white, even if I'm not considered white by the standards of my Mexican heritage or my Italian and Irish heritage, or if I am considered white, it doesn't matter. As somebody that is in this country, I benefit from this country. This country is the way that it is, and it's my home because of the influence of European civilization, the English cultural framework, the founding stock of the country. It's got to be preserved. And that is for the benefit of everybody, ultimately. And that does mean that there has to be some exclusionary attitude on the part of white and non-white Americans against new arrivals. You know, whites and blacks predominantly, but also Hispanics and Asians and, you know, recent immigrants and older immigrants, we all got to shake hands and say, we got a good thing going here, you know, or we had a good thing going up until recently. Let's keep all these fucking people out of here. Yeah. Because, you know, we like America because it's not like Africa and it's not like Mexico and it's not like China and it's not like these other places. And the more that people from those places come over here, they're going to ruin it for everybody. They're going to ruin it for the white people and the non-white people. They're going to ruin it for all Americans. And that's why America First, you know, it may seem counterintuitive at first, is really inclusive in the sense that, you know, everybody should want to put America first. America First may mean, and I think it does mean, keeping that white demographic core. That doesn't exclude the non-white people. It invites them in, you know, being the vanguard to protect that thing for the sake of everybody here. That's what America First means.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know,
pretty spot on.
Go on.
Well, yeah, I was about to say that I've certainly experienced some of the same things in the UK as well. Like when I was doing some phone banking for the Conservatives, like back in the 2015 election, yeah, you know, I'd come down and list and there were some like Indian names and I'd call them up. And yeah, there's this guy who's, you know, 70 and he's been here since like the 1960s. Yeah, and he says, you know, like all these recent immigrants coming in are absolutely ruining my neighborhood. You know, they don't they're not integrating into the culture. They don't seem to have any respect for the place that they've come to. And overall, in terms of the Sikh population in the UK, I think they actually vote conservative even more strongly than, yeah, in terms of the strongest demographic that supports them, because when we ruled India, they were very appreciative that we were there because they were being oppressed by the Hindus and so on. So they were always, you know, very loyal, like in the British Army and stuff. And then a load of them came over after the Second World War, and they are some of the most sort of patriotic, sort of pro, you know, Britain, you know, Union Jack flying people around. Because, you know, they actually came in and they, you know, came in relatively small numbers and respected the culture and heritage of the place. And, you know, like if America in the 1920s had, you know, 50 million Italians come across in one go, well, then suddenly it's going to all look a lot like Italy. You know, like that was the only reason, again, the Italians and Irish were able to integrate properly, because one, they came across in enough in low enough numbers, and two, they actually wanted to integrate, and they eventually did. You know, if there was, you know, again, the 100 million Italians or something coming across in one go, maybe, you know, the mafia, maybe it would be as bad as it is in Sicily and southern Italy right now.
Sure.
And, well, and even more than that, what are the immigrants that come here today assimilating into? I mean, back then it was assimilating into
exactly
roughly an American culture, something that was an authentic culture in the real sense. Nowadays, the immigrants who assimilate the best assimilate into this elite globalist, you know, lizard man culture that you can hardly even call a culture. It's just, you know, consumerism and neoliberal values. It's not American in any real sense.
Yeah, and that's the point. And I made this point, I don't remember what hit I did, but to what Nick said, I can amplify that by 1,000, because, you know, as a black man in America, it's like, okay, well, you know, where do I fit in here? And at the end of the day, you have to assimilate to the American culture. You have to assimilate to everything that the people who came here from England, and it was an English founding. You have to assimilate to everything they built, because they've built a great country. They've built a beautiful country. And we have to acknowledge the fact that that culture was able to make everything that we have today possible. So I get a lot of flack. Oh, you know, you're not black enough. You know, you're not culturally black. No, I've actually assimilated to this country.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. You know, we want to protect America the way that it is. And, like, you know, it may even be helpful to think of it in terms of, like, a different country, because maybe it's easier to conceptualize it on another country, because people have very strong feelings about our own. You know, it's like if I move to Japan, I'm moving to Japan because I like what the Japanese people have made, you know, and, like, I recognize that I am an outsider. I am a foreigner. I am a guest. I am, you know, even if I assimilate, even if my progeny live there, my posterity, they're adopted, you know, and they will never be, never, ever, cannot be, by definition, cannot be the biological, the blood spawn of the country. And that's okay. Yeah,
right, exactly.
You know, people are over there because they're like, I appreciate this place. And it's just something about, like, respect. And if you have a problem with that, then don't fucking go there. Don't come there. I'm not going to go to Japan. I don't even want to visit Japan because, you know, Japan is so unique. And, you know, they do have this very strong ethno-cultural sort of thing that doesn't exist in other countries anymore. And I almost don't even want to go because I've been a tourist. I went to Prague a couple of years ago, only time I've ever been outside the country. And I went to the old town in Prague where they had the historic cathedrals and everything. And the whole thing was turned into, like, this tourist destination. The whole thing was like a museum or like some kind of United Nations UNESCO heritage site. And I'm thinking, this is fucked up, because should not this place belong to the Czech? Should this place not belong to the locals and the people? Should not the historic cathedrals and town square, should that not be their town square? And now you've got fucking Pakistanis and Africans and British tourists, who I'm told are the worst, no offense, Jack, and, you know, all these people and me there. And it's like, I don't fucking belong here. Everything's a gift shop. And I'm just, you know, taking pictures and stuff. This is, like, offensive. And the idea that I would go to Japan, I almost don't even want to go. I want to respect it. It's like how, you know, there's these tribes that still exist in these remote islands, and there's these rules of engagement that you can't go there because, you know, we want to protect their way of life. I almost feel like that about Japan. I don't want to trespass. And if I did go as a guest, I would want to be respectful. I would be humble. I would be deferential. And if I moved there, you know, even the same there, I would learn their language. I'd learn their customs. I would try to be inoffensive. And, like, you know, that is not how people are when they come here. They come here and they're belligerent. They come here, they speak their language, they wave their flag, they disrespect us, they disrespect the people that have been here, they disrespect the founding fathers. I mean, they have the audacity to come here and say and speak ill of our founding fathers, and they participate in riots, and they take down our statues, and it's like there's not even a
pretense. And they burn our flag, yeah. By the way.
Yeah. Exactly. There's not even a pretense that they respect or appreciate this country, and we're supposed to roll out the red carpet and say America's a nation of immigrants. Fuck you. No, it isn't. It's not. It's not a nation of ungrateful, belligerent invaders, which is ultimately what it amounts to. And it's not to say that there are not immigrants who love America. There are. But, you know, to speak to the contrast, it's like my ancestors got here from Italy. And they kissed the ground when they got off the boat. I mean, literally, my grandmother tells me that story, that her father, who was a shoemaker on Taylor Street, when he arrived here from Italy, he kissed the ground, the fucking ground. And like, that is such a far cry from how it is today. And like, by the way, a lot of conservatives will acknowledge that, but they don't. Then they say, well, we need more good immigrants. It's like, no. Part of that respect, the logical conclusion of that is we have got to close down our borders so we can protect that thing that that immigrants are attracted to, protect that thing that people come over here and appreciate. It's like, no, if immigrants really respected our country and weren't just taking advantage of it, they wouldn't come here anymore because America's losing its identity and culture. And by immigrants pouring in, they're contributing to the loss or the theft of that. So the logical conclusion is not we need more of those good immigrants. We need more of those legal immigrants. It's like, no, we need to protect the thing that the immigrants are coming here for. And it's not for them. It's for us. It's for the people that are here, the Native Americans, not the American Indians, the people that descend from those that founded this country, this nation, the United States of America, not fucking Indians riding around on horses and shooting bows and arrows. I know people say those are the Native Americans. I mean, those people were here. They still are here in some numbers. But we all know this country was founded by George Washington, not, you know,
Sasquatch.
Weeping horse or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, like, that is the difference between the US and most of Western Europe in terms of the immigration ideas, that even most people, you know, even, well, Trump himself was still, you know, let them all come here legally. I think that's the only real thing that America's further left than Western Europe on. It is immigration. You know, it's absolutely a mainstream thing to say, you know, cut. You know, in the UK, you know, even the Conservative Party, you know, the mainstream party was promising to cut immigration down per year to the tens of thousands, you know, and people, you know, and advocating, you know, massive immigration slashes of legal immigration, you know, is not this taboo, you know, thing that it is in the States. And that's obviously, you know, down to the fact that, you know, we aren't a nation of immigrants, actually, although as much as that is one thing the American left is infecting our narrative over here. You know, we get stuff like Black Lives Matter when there's not a massive black population or we've never had slavery here. And we get the Nation of Immigrants thing because, oh, the Anglo-Saxons were immigrants. The Normans were immigrants. And it's like, shut the fuck up. This is taking the language of American discourse and populating it over here. Well, yeah, if you talk, well, yeah, immigrants are coming into America. And then American leftist ideas are going out the other way. That's America's greatest export, cringe liberalism.
So true. So true.
So true. So true.
We love America. And, you know, at the end of the day, people have just got to come around to just, like, fighting for something real. You know, it all comes back to that concept of, to bring it back around, it's like, you know, we have got to stop with these lame and like gay and like conciliatory ideas and narratives and fights that don't meaningfully challenge what's going on. I mean, none of what's going on in the right meaningfully challenges the contributing forces of America's decline. You know, I mean, like the most that the GOP can muster and the most that anybody can say in the right wing is like, they have to come here legally. I mean, like, that is Trump is seen in mainstream politics as an immigration hardliner, you know, and like a nativist. And the most that he would say when he was president was, they have to come here legally. We're going to build a wall and there's going to be a big, beautiful door in the middle of it. And it's like, no, like that's not good enough. No, they can't come here legally, illegally. We don't fucking want them. We've had enough of them. We don't need
the greatest thing they did? They crossed the border illegally. That's their big crime. What about the fact of how they feel about America? What about how they actually, do they revere our country? Do they actually respect our country? Do they actually believe that the American flag is something worth fighting for? And that's more of a litmus test, in my opinion, than whether or not, you know, they ran across the border legally or illegally.
Well, and ultimately, exactly. It's like, what are we really trying to do here? I mean, are these immigrants coming here because they are making life better for America? Or are they coming here, you know, for their own sake? Or they're being brought here for their own sake and for the sake of the ruling class? You know, I mean, people have to just start asking across the board, how is this making my life better? Like America, 25, 30 years ago, after we won the Cold War, it was like heaven on earth. It was the best time, the best place that there had ever been in world history, arguably, you know, or among the best. And we lost it. And why? You know, to what end? We had reached a point, some had called it the end of history. The times were so good that democratization and liberalization were spreading worldwide, uncontested hyperpower in the world, you know, world-class standard of living and technology, and everything was looking up and up. And now everything is shit. Everything is terrible. You know, the media is a sewer and the cities are disgusting and there's carjackings and crime and the whole thing's degenerate. Everyone's killing themselves. And like all these things are being done to us and our well-being is an afterthought. And the most resistance that can be mustered from the right wing or from anybody for that matter is these like gay complaints like, oh, well, they got to come here legally and like this kind of stuff. No, not good enough. I'm furious. Everyone should be furious. This country sucks. And like I've been saying this as like a joke. America first, more like America worst. And it's true. Like America is in total decline. Our well-being, we lost it. We let it slip through our fingers. Each generation, it will not inherit something better than the generation before it. And people are like, you know, it's like rearranging the tables on the deck of the Titanic. I mean, that's what it feels like with people on the right. And you get canceled by everybody that calls themselves uncensored, free speech. We're not politically correct. Oh, you made a cookie joke. Oh, you're against race mixing. Oh, you're against legal immigration. Yeah, well, you can't be on my show. You're an anti-Semite. You're one of these white nationalists or whatever. It's like, how about we get some people that have some balls and actually give a shit to step up and just tell the truth about what's happening in our country? Like, I was looking at Jocko Willink's Twitter today because a friend of mine started working out, and it's hilarious how every day Jocko Willink tweets out like aftermath. And he posts a picture of like his barbells and like his mile time or whatever. And I look at Jocko Willink's following list, and Jocko Willink, big, strong, buff, military guy, real man's man and everything. And, you know, don't get me wrong. He probably kicked my ass. He definitely could. And, you know, he would punch me so hard my head would explode. So, you know, take this for what it's worth. But he's following Nikki Haley and he's following Eric Weinstein and he's following like, and he is like part of the intellectual dork web of like, you know, Jewish neocons. And it's like this guy with all the machismo and all the muscle and all this hoorah, out, you know, all this America shit. It's like this guy won't even say what's going on in the country. And I doubt it's a matter of disagreement. He's either consciously or subconsciously refusing to engage with the real truth, which is controversial. And you can't sell children's books talking about it. It's authentically challenging the system that controls this country. And nobody's willing to do that. Everybody wants to protect their own little share of whatever they've got, whether it's their career or, you know, their money or their marriage or their friends or whatever. And it's like, you know, I can see the threat. I could see the imminent and severe threat, and I can see the gravity of it and its civilizational consequences, and I feel like it's come down to me, a 22-year-old college dropout, and like my friends to concoct the plan to put a stop to it. Well, all these people with all the money in the world and all the prestige and respect and credentials, they're just fucking around. They're just not doing anything, like I said, that is authentically and truly challenging what's going on.
Well, I think what it is, Nick, is even when you, observe the material impoverishment that this has brought us, I think even more profound is like the spiritual impoverishment of our nation. And by that, I don't just mean like the lack of faith in like the Christian God. It's like even the animating spirit of vivaciousness within human beings, like wanting to have a family, wanting to do these basic human things, have a family, have a group of friends that care about you, being loyal to people that you've known, being loyal to the place that you grew up in, respecting that place, appreciating it. All of that seems to have gone by the wayside. But to bring it back home to what is so good about what you're doing and what John and everybody else here is doing with America First is that that has created a vacuum and a hole that needs to be filled for people, that they, that makes what we're doing very winsome and very inspiring, and it grabs people. And I think that's why there's such a visceral reaction to America First, either positively or negatively.
True. All true. Human check. Real human check. I'm still a human.
I think I might have worked out who's been who's been sending the journo stuff.
Who?
At Lucy Blezzy. Lucy Brown, LB.
Lucy Brown. Let me.
Oh, it's like at that. Lucy Blezzy. B L E S I.
Attention, Clubhouse goers. Lucy Brown. What? I can't find her.
I think they've just left when I called them out.
Bitch.
Because they were nominated by the guy who was tweeting about it.
Aha! Good catch. Oi! Good catch, mate. Good catch, British man. Well, yeah, stupid dummy.
Part of the SAS, the Special Autism Service. Yeah.
Base. Well, yeah, I mean, it's like we can't even, you know, it's so gay. Like, we're in here, we're free thinking, you know, we're free thinking, we're just talking. I didn't write a script, I'm in my pajamas. I'm like, I'm going to go live on Clubhouse, I'm going to talk about, you know, whatever. And you have these like sniveling weasel journalists coming in here and they're live tweeting. Nick just said we should be racist. Nick just said, you know, whatever. And it's like, is that what society has come to? We can't have a conversation without like, I know that's how it is. Everyone knows how that is. But it's like, we need to forcefully reject that. People that participate in that are scum. I mean, they are like insects. You know, people that play by that kind of stuff, because there are conservatives that eat that up. I mean, there's conservatives that cite Right Wing Watch and cite Huffington Post and all that stuff, Daily Beast and whatever. And that is just like the most anti-human. Those are the people that like sentenced Socrates to death. Those are the people that crucified Jesus. These are the people that are like the eternal enemies of humanity and human greatness on some level, you know. And I'm not comparing myself to Jesus, obviously. I'm comparing them to Judas. I'm comparing them to, you know, the crowd of Jews that said, crucify him, crucify him, and free Barabbas. I mean, that's ultimately what they did when they kicked Trump out and put Biden in. I mean, that was freeing Barabbas, you know. So bad folks. Bad
true.
We piss on you. I piss on you, Zach Petrizzo, bitch. This is very vulgar. This club, hey, it's a clubhouse. Yep. Sorry, ladies. This is a clubhouse. It's men. This is how boys
talk. That's rule four of Clubhouse.
That's right. Locker room talk, ladies. If you can't hang, get out. If you can't hang, go get me a LaCroix. Go get me a LaCroix in the fridge, please. But
I mean, there's the New York Times article that was like private group chat, private messaging apps. They're the next hotspot of extremism. And it's like, if we can't talk, if we can't discuss things, if we can't have conversations as private individuals, then what even is the point of living?
True.
because we've done this for years. We've had phone conversations for years, and okay, maybe it's not all accurate, but when you're on the phone with your aunt, when you're on the phone with somebody you're friends with, it all has to be absolutely accurate. That's never been the way we've lived, and we're giving away mm-hmm. our way of life for the sake of political correctness.
That's true. It's true. And people are allowing it to, because it's not even like, look, the left is always going to do that. The globalists are always going to do that. These kinds of people are always going to do that. And it sucks. Like, because I've experienced this my entire life. I'll make an edgy joke. I'll say something out there that people don't want to say. And, you know, there's always it in all times on the playground, in the, you know, at a party, everywhere, and in all times, you get people that are like, oh, you know, you can't say that. That's inappropriate, whatever. And it's not even so much them. It's like the bystanders. It's the people that are complicit in that, the people that allow that to rule their lives. When are people going to join up with the forces of humanity and forcefully reject the, you know, for lack of a better word, the cancel culture that is like, we're just going to assassinate your reputation and now you're ostracized from society. You're in total exile. Like, that is so sick. And, you know, we all reap the benefits of people that are heterodox. We all reap the benefits of the innovators and the geniuses and the people out there. But yet we, in real time, are participating in the same kind of like thought control that kept them down in their time. You know, like I said, people today will say, oh, Socrates is so great. We love MLK and Jesus and Gandhi and Steve Jobs and Bob Marley and Malcolm X and John Lennon. And then they're like, oh, but if you're racist, you should be banned from Twitter. Oh, this guy just said something. He's white nationalist, banned him from everything. It's like, how do not people see what they're doing?
And like pretty much all the people you mentioned there were murdered.
Yeah, right. So true. Yeah, proud right-wing nut. Yeah, I'm a right-wing nut. Problem. Troll face. Problem. Yeah, I'm a right-wing nut. I'm a free thinker. I revel in that, you know? I mean, I was thinking the other day, like, Tim Pool won't invite me on his show. And then I was like, you know what? Good. I'm like, because I, you know, Tim Pool was like, oh, bring on Nick Fuentes, but, like, I'm not going to be bullied into doing it. It's like, no, you just won't have me on because I'm too controversial. And I was like, you know what? It's kind of epic. It's kind of like kick ass. It's like the Rolling Stones not being able to play on the that show because they said, let's spend the night together, whatever. You know, it's like, we're the real underground. We're the real, you know, I hate to say it, but like, conservatives are the real punk rock. But it's true. America First is like the real, we are. And that's a good thing. Yeah. Like, yeah, you know what? If Tim Pool doesn't want to invite me on, that says more about him than it does about me. It's like, yeah, America First is so out there that we're not going to be on fucking Joe Rogan on Spotify with the $10 trillion contract. We're not going to be welcome at CPAC. We're not going to be welcome at any of these things because we are the real deal. And in all times, the real deal, in most times, is not celebrated by the system. It's not integrated in the status quo. So, you know, a lot of times it sucks. And it's pain and it's suffering and it's not fair and it's miserable, but it's also worth it. I also wouldn't have it any other way because it's like, I would much rather be suffering and be real and suffer as a human than be comfortable as a slave, than be comfortable as somebody that's just along for the ride, you know, with the Pied Piper. So,
I mean, do I want to be Lawrence B. Jones? Fox News, just doing my 7 p.m. show. I mean, I rejected that because it literally just doesn't appeal to me. I mean, it is actually so unappealing to, you know, make a couple million bucks, probably, you know, maybe a mil, just sitting on Fox News and repeating stale talking points when I could actually be based in Epic.
So true.
Yeah, there's a we've got another journo to remove. It's Mr. Will Steakin at W Steaks here. Somebody
Will, hey, on Twitter. Will,
he's also been tweeting about it.
Look at his fat, pudgy face and his gay little glasses, and he's comb over. He's losing.
Wait, who is this? Where do I find this picture?
Will. He's at the bottom. He's in the bottom right.
Yeah, bottom right.
His little beard. Hi, I'm Will. I'm here to report on your convert. Yeah, get out of my. Yeah, you're banned from my clubhouse. Get out of my clubhouse.
Fuck off, faggot.
You're not a free thinker. You're banned. You're banned from my clubhouse. Get out. Out of the clubhouse. This is my clubhouse, and you're not invited.
Yeah, John, he's whining about your comment about how Trump's grabber by the pussy made you more, or made him more relatable. That's what he's whining about.
Oh, yeah, is he on Twitter? Where is he? Where is he whining
Will
about?
Staken.
I quote tweeted him. I quote tweeted him. It's on my timeline. I said, "Shut up, bitch."
Oh my goodness, these people.
Hi, I'm Will.
I'm probably gonna get a lot of shit for calling him a faggot, but whatever.
Well, that's what he is. Hi, I'm Will, and I'm here to I heard you're free thinking over here. I'm here to report to Twitter. I'm here to report to Black Twitter about what you're saying. Cringe. Yeah, we're grabbing life.
I thought the whole point of Clubhouse was that we're allowed to say whatever we want and we're allowed to be free thinkers.
Yeah.
Doubt.
And that doubt. They're not allowed to report on what we say. It's so funny.
Is the Clubhouse.
So
this
funny
is,
how
yeah,
that
base.
Doesn't work in the opposite direction.
No. This is the Clubhouse. Journalists not invited. No girls allowed. No journalists allowed. This is guy talk, okay? This is locker room clubhouse talk. We're not.
Oh,
this guy,
Will Steakin, he followed me the other day, and I'm like, oh my god, what is this ABC News 2020 campaign reporter doing? Following me? I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get in some trouble.
I'm blocking.
Yeah, I noticed when I was looking for people to follow here, Nick, going down your follower list, there were just so many of them. It was ridiculous. Like the amount of cringe journos that were just obviously hopping ready to see what Nick Fuentes would talk about in his secret clubhouse chats was just astounding.
They're total haters, and like ultimately the true victory is to there's something about being online which is very instructive about the human experience in the sense that the only way that you can lose on the internet is if you get mad. Like that's the first thing you learn on the internet is the first person that gets mad loses. When you're in the Call of Duty lobby, when you're trolling on Twitter, the person that gets mad that is like really, they're mad, they lose. And the same principle applies to life in the sense that like terrible things can happen to you and you can lose and you'll have haters and all of this. But ultimately, if you don't let them get you down, if you don't let them get the satisfaction of like making you mad or getting you upset or whatever, then like you win. I mean, ultimately, because I see people in my replies and this guy, they're, saying all kinds of nasty things. And it's like, what matters is that we stuck up for humanity. Like ultimately that is the victory. It's not victory in itself. It's not, a political achievement. It's not anything like that tangible. The victory is in our living, that we're living without limits. We're living without self-censoring. We're living unapologetically and being human. Like the act of doing that at all times is the victory over, this oppressive sort of system that wants to control and diminish and intimidate and all of that. Like ultimately that's why, it's living the dream every day, total victory every day, just by being human.
And it's beautiful. I mean, can you imagine? I literally can't relate to the type of person who literally, stuffs themselves into a suit every day and just, and goes to work and says the right thing and makes sure that they are completely acceptable to societal standards. I can't relate to that person. I literally cannot relate to that person.
Same.
Yeah.
Same.
I mean, like, if I had just shut my fucking mouth, I could have a nice, rich banker job in the city or something normal now. But, like, I didn't want to do that because that's just so, like, I would have been driven up the fucking wall if I had to, wage in an office 9 to 5 and, do, like, the fantasy football table and go on Tinder and talk about we smashed last night and do lines of cocaine with the lads at whatever. I don't know. Like that would drive me absolutely bonkers. And you know, like and now, yeah, like we're living and I'm doing something, you know, I'm doing something that matters, and like we all are. And it's just
bonkers.
A far better life.
Wait, bonkers is a term that you use actually.
Bonkers is British. We play a little football with the little footy with the lads. Go on, bonkers.
Hey, nah, no, I can't do cocaine with the lads.
We appreciate you, Jack. We love you, big guy.
No, I say this, and I say this all with absolute love and admiration.
Total love. Total love fest.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
We do totally love, love we have, I love totally the love, yeah. cheeky British vernacular. Very fun, very good. Really culturally enriching. We have John Miller with the hardcore Ebonics, hardcore and almost indecipherable Ebonics. I mean, I'm like, you know, I'm like, yeah, yeah.
Do totally you understand John. What I'm saying?
hardly. Sorry, I mean,
hardly, you know. Okay.
It's between you and Jack. I mean, I'm just like lost. That's like,
yeah.
So no, but it's you guys are like speaking in like Sims language. You ever play Sims and they all speak, yeah. What is it?
I played Sims back in the day.
Yeah, it's like Civilization 5.
It's a disaster.
The foreign leaders.
I used the cheat code that let me like build like an enormous mansion. And so I never actually played by the rules.
Based.
You have a base check over here.
Base department. Hello, base.
Base like... department.
Like that's also the difference between us and all the rest of Con Inc. You know, like we can take a joke. You know, self ribbing. You know, banter with the lads. You know, as our Zangalos like to say. You know, like that is just, it's completely absent, you know, in anyone, the normal in DC, you know?
Yeah, well, and you know what's funny is, like, it just dawned on me, like, I was having a conversation with somebody today, and they were like, oh, you know, QAnon is really dangerous, like, it's dangerous to talk about that, and I'm like, you know, it's funny because, like, left-wing people understand this dynamic of fear mongering. They understand the dynamic of like when George Bush was president, and when we can't talk about anything other than like how much white people suck and the weather and sports. So just to your point, it just dawned on me because I heard that earlier today, and it's like how twisted does your mind have to be? Like how far gone do you have to be to say like, language is it's very dangerous for you to think the wrong thing. Very dangerous for you to think something that's
well.
You know,
aren't these the people who are supposed to be so pro free speech? Whatever happened to that? I know it's a little bit of a normie talking point, but like these people have branded themselves as being completely pro speech for almost a decade now. And then all of a sudden, now they want to cancel right wingers.
Yeah.
Exactly. True. Pyramid of hate.
They're supposed to be the aren't you guys the liberals? Don't you like free speech now? But it's true. It's true. I mean, and like I think about my streaming and everything, and like I can't stream on YouTube, I can't stream on D Live, Twitch, anything like that. And you know, one day I was like, I want to do a gaming stream. I want to like play Grand Theft Auto and like eat food or whatever and hang out. And I'm like, oh, wait a second. I'm literally banned from doing that on the whole internet. And it's like, don't people realize what a fucked up thing that is? That it's like, I can't go on a stream. Like I can't like live stream a video of me talking to people. Like, and for what reason? I haven't committed a crime. I'm not violent. Like, I'm not a terrorist. I'm not inciting violence. I'm not inciting hate or, you know, whatever. It's like and we all know how this goes, but it's like I have the wrong views. It's this game that the YouTube and the platforms play with community guidelines and algorithms. And for that reason, I can't turn on a camera and access the same platforms and stream a video of me to people that want to watch me talk about
whatever. Talk about fast food, talk about politics, talk about movies. And, you know, I doubt people even really know so much about that or even care, to tell you the truth. I mean, people see that. Like, one time I was talking to this MTV guy. MTV, this, I don't want to get into the whole story, but they were doing a documentary about me at one point. And the main guy who was, like, following me around, I was talking to him about how Amazon was banning books. Amazon banned, I forget what it was at the time. Maybe it was E. Michael Jones or Roosh V or something like that. And I was like, you know, when you think about political censorship, when things get politically censored in a given country, the state will always say that the censorship is justified. Like I said, like in North Korea, North Korea will ban certain media, and the people in North Korea are like, okay with it, because the state says, well, you know, these are bad books. These are subversive books. And people are like, oh, okay. Like, we're rationalizing and justifying this because it challenges the state. And I said, similarly in America, books are banned, speech is banned all the time. And liberals will justify this by saying, like, oh, well, those were the racist books. Those were the bad books. And it's like, don't you see what's going on there? Don't you see that the books that are banned are always the books that are challenging the system, and that it that that's necessarily true, that books don't get banned if they don't challenge the system. And the books that do get banned are almost necessarily, are, with some exceptions, if they're gratuitously violent or, you know, perverse or something, they're the ones that are challenging the system, you know? So it's like, if you're championing the banning of books and you say, oh, well, those are racist books, it's like, that's what they're saying in North Korea. That's what they're saying in the Soviet Union. That's what they're saying in any totalitarian state. Of course, people are going to hand wave it away and say, oh, well, that's X, because those are the ones that challenge the status quo. And the guy's response, this like faggot liberal from California, he was like, oh, so you're saying that America's totalitarian because you can't sell racist books? And I'm like, yeah, exactly what I'm saying. And you're proving my point, dummy. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, the government and Amazon are not going to ban books that don't challenge them. Like, haven't you thought about the fact that Amazon allows the stuff that you read? And what does that say about what you read? That Jeff Bezos, the second richest man in the world, who has 50% of the market share of all books that are sold in America and a high percentage of all e-commerce on the entire internet, is greenlighting your book. I mean, by the act of censorship, that they editorially censor some things and not other things, that is in effect a expression of approval if they sell your book. You're buying a book that is approved by the billionaire class, and you're okay with books being terminated that are not approved by the billionaire class. And so the question is begged, who is really opposing the billionaire class? Bernie Sanders and Democratic Socialists and AOC and all these other dummies, or the so-called racists, the so-called conspiracy theorists? You know, like, to me, when I was in college, that was like the biggest moment of clarity ever, was realizing that the people who are maligned and labeled in such a way that people don't engage with them seriously, that's probably where the truth is. If the system is corrupt, if the people that run the system conspire, if they're willing and able to use their power to censor and control and manipulate the conversation in the country, then it is going to be the outsiders, the pariahs. It is going to be the political prisoners and so on. Those are the people that are going to have the answers. Those are the people that are the ones that are truly opposing the system. I mean, this is just like obvious when you think about it that way. And what you tend to find, you know, because when I was a libertarian in high school, I thought the same thing as everything else, that you've got Nazis who just, you know, they just hate Jews and they just hate blacks just because they're evil. And, you know, they just want to kill people and they're totally sickos. And then you start to go and you read into who these so-called villains are on the right. And you're like, oh, wait a minute. It's actually not that. Actually, it's not what they say. They're not the terrorists against the government that are undermining society, you know, in this totalitarian system. They're the good guys. And I'm not saying like, oh, Nazis are good guys. I'm saying it's the people that are called these things and thrown under the bus and censored. They're the ones that are challenging it. They're the good guys, because this system is evil. And the evil system is coming after people. The people that are opposing the evil system, the people that are opposing the evil system are good. I mean, this stuff is just like, you know, at the very least, people have got to consider something like that. I mean, I don't think that logic stands on its own independently, but it's one way of looking at things that a lot of people just never consider.
Well, yeah, I mean, eBay doesn't want you to know that eating green eggs and ham increases your T levels by 500%. You know, like they're keeping this knowledge from you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good one.
And that was the whole thing about the whole Dr. Seuss thing. Like when I first heard Dr. Seuss was being canceled, I was like, okay, you know, that's super lame. But then the so-called right used that as an ability to completely just say, we're against cancel culture and we're not going to stand for this. And I said, this is so lame. Standing up for Dr. Seuss, really, that's brave. Really, that's where you're going to take a stand. And simultaneously criticizing everyone at AFPAC and then saying, well, no, we're against cancel culture because Dr. Seuss being canceled. And you're like, okay, what actually do you stand for? Because standing up for Dr. Seuss, who is a lefty cartoonist at the end of the day, mm-hmm. is not an act of bravery.
Yeah, I mean, where is everyone defending, you know, Dr. Gosar from speaking at AFPAC?
No one. They're slamming him. They're throwing him under the bus.
Nick on?
Yeah, it looks like Nick it was disconnected.
Oof. But yeah, no, everyone's, yeah, you know, Gosar's getting absolutely attacked, you know, for daring to speak at AFPAC. You know, but I think that's a good sign of the times in terms of where, you know, where the good core of the GOP, you know, Gosar, you know, Biggs, there's been a number of other good people in Arizona, you know, you've got, you know, people in Florida, but yeah, it's going to start expanding towards, you know, well, Nick and AFPAC and everybody there is starting to get this actual influence.
Yeah. I have to cough and I'm struggling to find the mute button.
Lower right hand.
view profile.
Yeah. So speaking to what Nick was saying about kind of like the forces on the far left, like the so-called honest liberals, and how they think that they're fighting against the system. And you can even look at like people like Paul Gosar who are targeted, or, you know, the whole thing with the COVID lockdown, where it wasn't the objects of the ire of people were not like big business that was making a ton of money throughout this whole thing. It was individual business owners who wanted to keep their businesses open, right? And it was politicians who wanted to try and let like small business owners, medium-sized businesses operate. And so what you see is like the forces of like the far left or the left-wing populism are actually just channeled by the powers that be as sort of like a de-coolacization. They are disenfranchising normal people and taking out all the resentment on them, while the people at the very top, who are actually the people that are in control of everything.
Right. So here's where Nick's gone. He's been suspended.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Whoa. Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Suspended violating our hateful conduct policy for conversations.
Was it tweeted out?
I mean, we suspected Nick, this, but Nick, I didn't suspect it would be this quick.
Do you guys want to go that ahead and wrap this up then?
Yeah. Wow, that is insanely fast.
Yeah,
it only took about 3 hours for conversation.
What was did they list the offending remark?
No, it just says violating our hateful conduct policy for conversations.
Yeah, like I said, this act is completely woke.
Didn't last.
I was listening to the conversations on it earlier, and it was just you know wokeism and multiculturalism, and I said, there's no way we're gonna last on this.
Yeah, that is. Oof. I'm still the first convert.
Wait, but I just got a green star. Wait, I just got a green star. Is that a?
You're the moderator. What is that?
Of the room now, yeah. That means you're in control. Control has been passed to you.
Hold on, Lefty Crippo wants to come in.
Oh, hell yeah!
Invite to speak. All right.
Yo.
All right, yo. Lefty. What's up, man?
What's up, boys?
How's it going? This sucks. I knew it wouldn't last long, but I didn't think it'd be a matter of hours for Nick.
I didn't think it would be during the clubhouse. Yeah. I figured it'd be late at night, you know. Kicked in the middle of it.
Yeah, that's too bad, man. I mean, we all knew it would happen, but it's too bad.
That was quick. I did want to say that the reason I followed John and Nick was, like you guys were saying earlier, is telling the truth and things about, you know, being like anti-mass immigration should be uncontroversial. But apparently it is controversial because they'll kick you off the app for doing that.
Yeah, I'm curious to know, just out of curiosity, what he said that was so that violated their terms of service.
It seems like, you know, kicking that journalist was what was the catalyst.
Because I'm still here. I'm still kicking. I'm still chilling.
Yeah, the rest of us are. Yeah.
For now.
For now.
For now.
But wow. That was very quick.
Yeah, it certainly took. And we started it, well, it was 3:30 my time-ish. 3:15. And it's now 5:30. So about 3 hours.
I'm wondering, should I?
I don't think anything you guys fire said off was controversial.
This? No, I certainly didn't say anything. It was, well, again, anything I wouldn't say on anything I wouldn't say on Twitter or anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, but given the Overton window at play on places like this, I think it's pretty far beyond the pale for what they want to tolerate.
And as John said,
that seems about right.
As John said, when you see the picture, the thumbnail for the app, we weren't going to last long.
Yeah, no, you see the picture for the app. It's, you know, this you know, ethnic faggot with a hat on, you know, and like, I'm just like, there's no, and then I was listening. I got an invite for Felicia's dinner party to talk about woke movies. And I'm like, okay, there's no way these people are actually pro free speech. You know the types.
This fag pushing out his Adam's apple.
You know? Yeah, right.
Ugh, apparently.
But that sucks. But that sucks. They cut him off mid speech.
He was.
He was like literally in the mid speech. They just cut him off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think people were probably monitoring the situation.
We're monitoring the situation weekly.
But the thing is, I thought that this app that you shouldn't record, you shouldn't report on what we're saying in these rooms because there's, you know, it's free speech. That's what I was told.
John, we all know that's bullshit, though.
I know. Of course I know that. But, like, it's just when they actually fulfill what you actually think about them, it's just ridiculous.
Fool me once. Yeah.
There's two other conversations I could see going on right now. People I follow, it's like cancel culture, Dr. Seuss and corporate social responsibility, and Dr. Seuss again, and you know, nothing as, you know, freely speaking as everything we talked through, you know, tonight.
It is funny that he got banned from the innocuous Dr. Seuss cancel culture part.
Yeah, right. He was talking about, you know, well, okay, Dr. Seuss, you know, he, like, you know, we stand against canceling Dr. Seuss, banned.
Yeah, that's a bridge too far. Excuse me. How dare you?
Yeah, we can't have depictions of Asians glorified.
Dr. Seuss really was literally anti-America first. I mean,
yeah.
He made
terrible. Yeah. The fact that like we're all rallying behind Dr. Seuss is ridiculous.
Well, he was a pro-war propagandist for the Roosevelt administration.
Yeah.
Yep. That's where he got to start, because he was anti-America first, where he, you know, made that painting where it's, or that picture where it's the America first beard tied to the Nazi beard.
Yeah. And many, many more.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's just one of the more famous ones. So Nick's like, you know, I don't really need to stand behind Dr. Seuss. They're like, get off this app. Get off now.
Yeah, it's like, no. No, you must defend Dr. Seuss 100%.
You better hop on pop or you're getting off.
I'm probably gonna fucking.
We all knew that would be the end result.
Yeah, someone should call Dr. Seuss a pedophile for hop on pop, you know.
Dr. Seuss.
I'm looking at, but I don't understand because I'm looking at these. I'm looking at these apps. I'm looking at these. These rooms, and it's saying. Republicans and conservatives, cancel culture, Dr. Seuss, corporate social responsibility. I mean, why would the Dr. Seuss thing be the thing that actually boots him off the app?
I think it was just, it took time to get the relevant authorities notified and get him off.
to that he was actually on the app and using it.
Right.
Yeah, they had to wake up the
scrum of their like responsibility team and decided that even though it was against their principles to censor people, that some conversations just have to be censored in order for them to maintain a free and open space. You know, the whole Karl Popper. We cannot tolerate the intolerable, you know.
They had to wake up the Brahmin caste guy who runs this site.
Yeah, that's actually true.
Yeah, that sucks, dude. Well, I mean, we're like just talking about like what can actually go down on this app, and you know, it's just these woke conversations and this woke app icon and all of this stuff is just it's so stupid.
Yeah, it's people making themselves feel better about themselves.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's
they claim that they're in favor of not canceling people and that they're in favor of actually promoting free speech. And the minute someone actually free speaks, they get booted in the middle of their speech.
Yeah, I think there's only really one free speech. I mean, yeah, it's only really Gab that's actually completely 100% stuck by the, you know, their speak freely motto. Yeah, everybody else it's just all performative.
Yeah, because I hear that even Telegram, they're going into the Telegram accounts and trying to monitor those.
Oh, well, they are. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
That's how Chris Cantwell got busted for bringing weapons or whatever, because he like threatened somebody on Telegram. So Gab really is the only place.
Yeah.
And the problem with Gab is fighting the good fight, but they're just so cumbersome at this point.
It's an uphill battle. I mean, they can't even get a ban.
I reported earlier on the two bank on two of the four banks that they were banned from. It's MBT Bank and something City Florida Bank or something along those lines. But yeah, he's going to name the other two. City National Bank of Florida and MBT Bank. He's going to name the other two once he's closed the accounts down.
Wow.
Fully, and got all the money out.
Yeah, I know City National Bank, not of Florida, but I know City National Bank.
Yeah, and I'm.
Yeah.
I'm assuming.
I think it's that one.
Those are probably smaller banks because the bigger banks already banned them.
City National has all the Hollywood accounts, so that's why.
Yeah, City National is a big, I think it started in California, which is where I'm from, and you know, it was a kind of an elite bank that.
That is actually two different ones. It is City National Bank of Florida.
It's a different one. Okay.
Yeah.
Because the City National in California does all the TV and movies. Like that's where they keep all their money. They would never allow
Beverly Hills Hollywood bank account in bank.
Yeah. No. Yeah, so clearly they must have been banned from all the big ones because it's only these smaller two. And again, I assume the other two are small as well. But obviously they've been banned. PayPal, fucking pretty much everywhere. But that's the reason why they're able to survive, you know, after January the 6th, because they already had all their whole infrastructure set up, as opposed to Parler, which just got absolutely fucked by everybody in one go.
I loved somebody tweeted at Greg Abbott today. They were like, you're going to let Amazon like put a headquarters in Texas after they banned Parler? And you're like, as much as I don't like Parler, I'm like, well, they're not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I got fucking blocked by Dan Bongino on Twitter for linking the new CEO of Parler and George Soros and like this gay convention of states project or whatever the hell. And he had it was like, I don't know this Jack Hadfield, but it's not true, folks. And then he claimed Torber like told us to write the article, which was complete bullshit. Then Torber was like, well, yeah, I don't know what's going on with Bongino. Why claim this baseless stuff, and I haven't been on Parler now because it's completely fucking broken, you know. And it was like the conic them trying to actually produce this free speech app, and they just had no idea what they were doing.
So yeah, I remember, John, you know that like Beardson was banned on Parler like before the app pulled out. You're like,
oh really?
Like,
no, actually June, didn't know July that. I remember
writing it up. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you did. It's like, okay, we're the free speech app, but like, if you ever mention Israel, you're fucked. Get the hell off.
Yeah,
but,
well, they
banned a bunch of Democrats as well for trolling like big neocon accounts.
Yeah, I remember a lot of the like Korean stan accounts moved to Parler to try to like, you know, like muddy the waters and whatever. But I was just like, this app sucks.
Yeah. No, it's just, and now it's completely unfunctional and broken, and I can barely even, you know, get stuff up even if I wanted to.
Yeah, I'm a Gab stan. I stan Gab.
Yeah,
but the problem is that they had a big security breach, you know? It's like, even if their principles are good, it's like, can you trust one of these alternative platforms to be, you know, on the up and up?
Well, right, with Gab, right. with Gab, they don't ask for personal information, so you can actually,
yeah,
you can miss on there to where you don't have any problems,
right? Whereas with Parler, they want your phone number,
and that was license. Parler got hacked. They had like ID and stuff like that.
And at the end of the day, with Parler, it was like, okay, well, they got all the information that they needed on Republicans in an unconventional way that was much cheaper than any conventional Republican way would actually be able to accomplish. You know, they got all these donors' information, they got their phone numbers, they got their location, they got their information. And so whatever is happening to it, even if it fails, that's, you know, that's a win for them.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that Parler is definitely compromised.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, given it's, again, what seemed to be when they pushed out Matzi is that, you know, Rebecca Mercer has pretty much fully taken control. And now it's, you know, her plaything.
It's her plaything. So. And after January 6th, I don't believe that they didn't give access to the feds.
No, 100%. I'm sure they must have. Yeah, that's because they're good little boys and girls. They'll do everything the federal government wants them to, you know?
I mean, if Dan Bongino was a Secret Service agent, I'm like, I can't trust you. Like, anything you're attached to, I'm like, go fuck yourself.
I saw a few people after the article came out linked to the it was Nick, oh no, what's his name, the guy from Super Deluxe who did all the like song remixes, like the Alex Jones is an indie folk song, and
oh, I love that.
Yeah, that is... yeah, he did the one from like I want to be at the RNC, I want to meet Dan Bongino, and it goes on about like he wants Dan Bongino to be his dad, and I go down to the basement with Dan Bongino. Oh, that was there's some good fucking content creators out there.
Yeah, I think, and I like Dan. I mean, I met him before, but I don't trust it. I don't trust it at all. I don't think anyone should trust it.
Yeah, even if Dan himself, if his heart, even if his heart's in the right place, yeah. I don't think he gets it fundamentally. Right. I don't think he understands what he's up against. I don't think he understands the paradigm that we're in politics right now. I just think he fundamentally, he's like most boomers and Gen Xers. He just doesn't get it.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yep. And he makes his Secret Service pension, which is probably, what, 90 grand a year or so, like, he makes his money. He doesn't give a shit. You know, he gets to go on Fox News.
Well,
he definitely doesn't get it.
Books, his speaking fees, like all kinds of stuff. Like, there's no incentive, fortunately.
No, I mean, with him, like, he wrote that book or whatever, like, during the Trump administration. So I'm like, he probably got at least $25,000 advance plus whatever he made after that. Cause I think he's a New York Times bestseller now. So. That guy definitely doesn't get it.
I mean, I know Dan. He's a good guy. He's a good guy. Dan.
Yeah,
I've met him. He's a good guy. You know, and I'm not, and you know, you have to you have to give some wiggle room. I'm not exactly sure what happened with him and Parler or Parlay, or however you pronounce it. But he's not a bad guy. Despite, no, you know, whatever public disagreements you might have with him.
Look,
yeah, which
I
is think, what said
no, well. I like Dan. I just think that masses. I just think that app is compromised. That's all
yeah.
I'm saying.
Yeah, I think he tried to do a good thing, trying to like make sure that it was on board, and saw that the leadership was floundering and kind of wanted to help out. But unfortunately, I just don't think that he gets the real situation that we find ourselves in terms of tech censorship and you know, that sort of stuff. He just doesn't get it. He doesn't understand.
Because, especially when he like promotes himself and he's like, I was a Secret Service agent for Obama. Like, I don't care about like Democrat, Republican. You're like, I can't trust you then, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's what he was. That's where he made his bones, you know.
Mm. You think, I'm not going to 100% trust an ex-spook, you know. Yeah. As much as like no matter what they say.
Yeah, Jack, you're right. I mean, it's like I would have taken a bullet for Obama, like, and I'm like, okay. No thanks.
Yeah. Wait, sorry, completely non sequitur. I have a green like star by my name. Does that mean I just got verified, or is that
no, and you're the moderator of this chat by default.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, too bad. Too bad.
The throne has come to you, Mr.
You are now, in fact, the leader of the alt-right.
Yeah, right. The name of this chat is, Hi, I am Nick Fuentes. I am streaming on Clubhouse right now. But I guess
he's
had to pass the throne down.
Yeah. Hail John Miller. Hail victory.
The king is dead. Long live the king.
Coalition of the Ascendant has inherited the chat.
Yeah. Hail John Miller. Hail victory.
Well, I was thinking about Spencer earlier because he's another example of people who, you know, don't actually, you know, actually help, you know, fix anything because he's not banned off of fucking anywhere.
He's never been banned ever.
Wait, who are you talking about?
Richard Spencer.
Oh yeah.
You see what he said about AFPAC earlier?
Yeah, it was incoherent. It was literally incoherent.
I've never, like, education major college girls don't use that many malapropisms, man.
Right. Yeah. Also, I think it was kind of one of those things where he was almost jealous that, like,
yeah,
his conference never got anything like that, but he couldn't show any deference. So he was like, well, here's the thing. Like, you would say that at CPAC, and it was like, you wouldn't say any of that at CPAC. They would kick you out for saying that.
No, of course. I mean, of course. No,
I can walk you off the stage.
Of course he would never say any of that at CPAC.
That's what I mean. It was like, he tried his hardest to, like, find a criticism. And, like, mm-hmm. like OR was saying, it was like a, you know, girl trying to get her master's or something.
Right.
Yeah. I don't necessarily think he's a fed, but he's certainly a fucking useful idiot. You know, with this.
I think he's a fed. Like, I think he's for sure a fed.
He's been on.
You know, telling everyone to vote Democrat. It's like, what?
Yeah, he campaigned for Biden.
Yeah, yeah. Unironically, like, I'm sorry, but that's exactly the sort of person who'd be like, oh no, guys, you're like, don't vote Trump because, you know, we've got to accelerate. We've got to vote Democrat. Sounds exactly what, you know, the government or the globalists would want Trump supporters to do, and America First people to do, you know, be persuaded by. Yeah, it's the exact line that they would take and pump out.
Yeah, he did the company line, which is Obama deported more people than Trump. But what that number takes into effect is people just turned away at the border. So when they, like, got there and got turned away, they counted as a deportation. Like, this guy is obviously a fed.
Exactly.
He's also just an idiot. Like, he's also just a fucking idiot. Like,
and then look at his family.
Like, he was literally like, they had some legislatures speak. They had some legislatures speak. And then he didn't know Paul Gosnar's name. He didn't know Paul Gosnar's name. He was Paul Gosnar. Paul Gosnar. And I believe he said the word internet, which I don't think is an actual
internecine is a word, but internet.
Internet. No, he said internecine. Yeah.
Yeah, he said internecine.
Bro.
And he was just like, retarded phrase, like, just like a complete.